Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 18th year. I'm your host, Jess Marquez, and our guest today is Jim Preston, Vice President of Global Innovation for Interblock, to talk about his experiences in the Australian and Asian markets, the rise of electronic table games, and the secret sauce that makes Interblock's games stand out in an increasingly crowded field. Today's GGB podcast is sponsored by IGT. IGT is paving the way of cashless gaming yet again, with 14 properties live in North America. Resort Wallet combined with IGT Pay is quickly becoming the preferred method of cashless gaming for both players and operators. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. Today's gaming industry is tech-centric and user-friendly, two characteristics that don't necessarily apply to traditional table games. Electronic table games, however, that's a different story. Jim Preston has long been at the forefront of the ETG wave, and earlier this year he made the jump to Interblock, the market leader, as its new Vice President of Global Innovation. With decades of operational experience and a keen eye for the future, Preston will look to push the new technology forward as its influence grows among players around the globe. He spoke with GGB Managing Editor Jess Marquez from his Sydney office in July. Jim, thank you so much for joining me today. It is early morning for you and it is late afternoon for me, but I'm so glad that we can make this work. How are you doing today?
Yeah, Jess, great to catch up with you online. Thanks for having me. I'm doing really well. It's a winter day in Sydney, but it's bright and sunny.
So you are the global head of innovation for Interblock. And what I always like to do, obviously, is start with the guest first. And I've talked about this a number of times on this show. I'm sure probably listeners are probably tired of hearing me talking about it, but I love LinkedIn as a resource to just get a nice overview of somebody's, you know, experiences and what they've been through in their career. You have a wealth of table game experience, specifically in the Australian and Asian markets. And we were talking a lot off air about how you got started in the business. So could you kind of talk a little bit about that experience and kind of what led you to this point now with Interblock, which you've been there for a few months now, about half a year?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Well, I go back to 1994 when Crown was beginning to open their casino in Melbourne, and there was a dealer job going, and I applied for it and got it and did 6 weeks of training with people that have never dealt a game, unfamiliar with casinos. I'd never stepped into a casino. So we did 6 weeks of training and the casino opened and no one knew what to expect. There were queues out the door. There was 5-6 people deep on every game. My first night, opening night, was dealing a game. I think you guys call it Big Six. We call it Money Wheel. And within the first hour, I'd made the monumental error of paying out the wrong payout, and I had to endure the wrath of the supervisor and pit boss, and I was pretty much tapped off that game pretty quickly and told to deal blackjack for the rest of the night. So it's still etched in my brain today, some 30 plus years later. But that was my first experience. Dealt blackjack for probably almost a year, and the way it works is you get another game. So then trained in roulette, dealt roulette, and then obviously all the other games, baccarat. You work your way through the business. So the next step is supervisor. If you continue to do well, get a pit boss gig. And the term pit boss was quite a dominating term to have, like pit boss, like pit bull type, and they were like that. If you were ever called to speak to the pit boss, it was like going to the principal's office. So I became that person, but I wasn't like the principal. And then continued to work my way through the business and different facets of Crown. Looked after VIP local customers, so we had a core group of Vietnamese and Chinese customers that played a crucial part of the business to the success of the local business. So I led a team that would engage those customers and really focus on building that part of the business. And then from that, I switched to poker. I dealt poker, but then I was called back to look after the poker room. And we had a tournament that we used to run every year that was a pretty big deal called the Aussie Millions. It was based on the World Series of Poker model. It was a 10K buy-in and it grew exponentially through the years. I think we started off with, I think it was single digits, maybe 100 in the first couple of years. And it grew up to 750, 800 people playing that, but the part I played the role in was building this VIP high roller poker tournament. So on a whim, we created a $100,000 tournament, thought let's open it up to the players. And I think we had 20 odd runners within the first year. And then that grew and grew and grew with the online success. People would just come and play because with poker hitting TV. And then we decided to create a 250K event. And my last year there, I think we had 40 odd runners in a $250,000 tournament. And then you spoke about my experience in Asia. My wife got a job with Galaxy in Macau. So we moved to Macau in 2015. And now I'm just back in Sydney. So the Macau gig, I started literally on the other side of the table. So I got a job with TCS John Huxley as their sales director, and then was approached by Scientific Games at the time and joined them as their ETG product director. And my last role when it was Light and Wonder was their global product director for electronic table games. And then the Interblock opportunity presented itself when I was in transitioning back to Australia, and I spoke to John Connolly, the global CEO, and he offered me a position looking after the global innovation. So it's a big role. And the one thing that Interblock do is innovate. So I'm complementing that part of the business and very, very excited about the future.
Well, it's fascinating. And after you told me for the first time about how you got started in the industry, I was thinking to myself, like, man, if there was ever a situation where you would either love something or hate it, you know, that's pretty much trial by fire right there. And it appears obviously that, you know, you went the love route. And also, we were also talking about table games in particular, because that's one area of the industry that I am finding increasingly interesting as I progress, you know, in my role and meet more people and learn more about the industry at large. Is like gaming itself is kind of a niche, and then you have table games, which is like a further niche within the niche. And everybody that works in the sector seems to be like really interesting in various ways. And it just seemed, not to say that obviously other areas aren't interesting, but I find them extremely interesting myself, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And as somebody who grew up in Reno, you know, surrounded by casinos, I think I told you this last time, but tables always represented to me what the ideal of a casino was, or I guess what the motif of a casino was a table. So kind of what drew you to the sector, and, you know, what do they mean to you? Kind of what do they symbolize to you rather?
Well, it's pretty cool when someone asks what you do and you say, I work in gaming and I work in casinos. You know, people all of a sudden are conjuring up images of the De Niro movie Casino, and then the 21, the blackjack card counting movie. Like, it is a very cool niche industry. And honestly, I'd love to write a book one day about all my experiences. It's never dull. Each day is totally different. Like, even when I was in operations, there'd be something always new that you'd never thought of that you would come across. And you would come across these things almost every day, if not weekly. And then moving to this side of the business, like literally, as I said, the other side of the business, now I've got an opportunity to create games that complement existing traditional table games. Like, I mean, roulette, baccarat, blackjack, craps, they've all been around forever. But what can you do to make them different without tweaking them too much that it takes away from the main part of the game? And that's what I've been tasked with. And that's what I find fascinating. It's like, I'm looking at spreadsheets and I'm tweaking math and I'm like, but I'm looking at it from an operator point of view. Like, operators obviously want to have more house edge, but then from a customer point of view, they're not stupid. They understand when they're getting gouged. So, you know, you need to have that balance, and that's where I've got both hats on. I like to have a bit of a flutter myself. I like to play roulette. I like to play blackjack, even poker. I'm terrible at poker, but I like to play. So I understand what the customer expectation and experience is like, but I also understand it from an operator point of view and what they're after as well. So it's aligning those two and producing a product that complements the both of those. And, you know, hopefully we get something that works.
That's a great point. That's a really great point. And I want to touch a little bit more on the innovation part of it a little bit later. But I kind of want to start by kind of setting the stage in terms of ETGs specifically, because they're obviously a relatively new development in the table space, and obviously with the success of Interblock and others, have become a fairly how would you say, burgeoning, sector within games. What first drew you to ETG specifically? Well, why did you, I don't think I asked you this before, but why did you make that switch from the traditional tables to ETGs, and kind of what do you think makes them an attractive offering in today's market?
Well, first of all, the attractive offering of ETGs, again, there's two parts of it. It's the operator and it's the customer offering. So let's look at for an operator point of view, there's so many more efficiencies involved with ETGs, less dealers or no dealers at all. Obviously, game integrity is a big thing. Accuracy and data are the other two other factors as well. And then you think about what makes the customer experience more enjoyable. And we spoke about this when we first spoke, is about the table games experience is very intimidating. You may have played blackjack or 21 or pontoon with your family at home with matchsticks, and you go, oh, there's that casino blackjack game. I'm going to take a seat and I'll fork out my $10 because it's probably not even that cheap on the strip, maybe $25. And so you take a seat and you sit down and play, and you get your cards dealt, and all of a sudden you have to make a decision. Now that decision could impact the other players on the table. And if you make the wrong decision, because there's a book written on basic strategy, because you'll be told that within the first 5 minutes of sitting down or within the first second of making a mistake. If you don't know basic strategy, you're going to upset the table, and you'll walk away from there going, well, that wasn't the best experience. I didn't enjoy that at all. Roulette, you're getting hustled and bustled and pushed around with people just trying to get bets on. So here you can sit at your own terminal and just bet at your own leisure, not make the wrong decision, completely go against the book. And you're not having someone in your ear tell you that you're doing the wrong thing. It's quite a private gaming experience. You can sit down and bet as little or as much as you like, because that's the other thing. You might sit down and you get intimidated by someone betting a significant amount of money, and you just want to bet the minimum. So, like, there's so many factors in terms of what ETGs tick boxes for that customer experience. Obviously, price point is the other key factor as well. We advertise Interblock is one of the big things that we do. Obviously, our product looks fantastic, but it's about the key communication pieces that we have on show to when the customer walks into a casino, because there's so much noise. But if you can see 50-cent roulette or a dollar roulette, you go, well, hey, hang on a second. That's something within my budget. I can sit down and play that. And then away you go. So, I mean, that's what makes ETGs attractive, because it ticks both boxes of, again, the operator and customer, which I keep going back to. As to what attracted me to electronic table games, I was a pit boss when the first electronic table game roulette came into Crown Melbourne. And we had live dealer then. And we had, I think it was 20 stations around it. And it was a lot different back then. We had players cashing in with chips. And now it's ticket in, ticket out. It's all Tito, so it's all automated. And it was like a mini table. So there was a lot of things that obviously didn't go as planned. So I became the subject matter expert on opening the cabinet up and just fixing things. So I mean, I was drawn to it that way because I do like hardware and technology and problem solving. And just from that, when I went to Macau, obviously I did want to go into operations, but the electronic table games opportunity presented itself, and having the knowledge of obviously table games, but also being on both sides of the fence as a player and an operator, but now as a manufacturer, it became, a perfect synergy to understand what makes a product work.
Definitely, I can de now that you explained it like that, I can definitely see how both sides of those experience can combine to lead to that path. I'm gonna hit you with another two-part question, and I promise it's the last two-parter.
Okay.
But in terms of demographics, and we touched on this a little bit, but ETG demographics, What have you, you know, at Interblock obviously is a leader in the space along with Light and Wonder and a few others. What have you and others kind of differentiated in terms of ETG players versus standard table players versus slot players, et cetera? Kind of what are some of the defining characteristics of an ETG player, so to speak? And then secondly, is there, in terms of market, is there a particular market that you're seeing are adopting ETGs faster than others? Is there some that are lagging behind, you know, et cetera? So kind of what would you say in terms of demographics?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's not an easy question to answer because you can walk into a casino and you'll see a cross section of people playing. If I go back to my time at Crown Melbourne, we would have anything from the players that obviously are budget conscious playing ETGs, and that could be, you know, anyone from a younger age to an older age. But you'd also have your what we would consider, you know, your higher level customer that wanted to play roulette, for example, and didn't want to sit down on a roulette table in front of everyone and bet significant amounts of money. And they had that privacy. So that was the initial type of customer. It was a cross section. And then obviously COVID hit, and then we just saw this massive uptake of people wanting to play electronic table games because, you know, it was hygienic. You weren't touching chips, you weren't touching cards, you weren't touching cash. There was some you know, there was some gaps between the machines, so there was some segregation. And then from that, players who would never play an electronic table game were now, that was their designated game of choice. They were leaving the live table games, and we saw it in particular markets. And I'll highlight one, Singapore, for example. Their high roller customer, they saw a huge transition of their high roller customer to electronic table games. And yeah, so just because of the hygiene, the privacy, and a lot of factors. And this has maintained, these customers have maintained now the fact that they are still playing on these electronic table games. Hence the reason that there is still growth in this area now that markets have opened up, but now operators are realizing that, hey, we don't have enough electronic table games. So that's great for us. We're obviously, you know, riding that coattail. But what was the other part of the question?
Well, just like what markets are higher or lower on the machines themselves? You mentioned obviously Singapore is very high.
Yeah.
Is there a particular market that you see kind of lagging behind in terms of adoption and implementation?
Well, it's funny you say that. Like Australia, I would say, is a very mature market because they've been in for, you know, 25 plus years. As far as markets to adopt, there is growth in areas, particularly North America. Like there is huge opportunities there because it's about, you know, educating the players. The operators need to have a strategy in place. And that strategy is obviously price point. Now, how do we evolve the table games customer? A table games customer like yourself, your demographic, how do we get you to come in and play table games? And it's about building that price point strategy. So you come on in, and rather than hitting a blackjack table, as soon as you walk in, it's 50 bucks. It's about positioning an electronic table game at the start of the entry point. So it's like, well, that price point is now a dollar. So you then all of a sudden go, well, I can afford that. And then taking that, obviously, that communication, but then it's important to you sitting down on the machine and then understanding how to play it. And that's one thing that we're really working hard at Interblock is the user experience. Because, I mean, I've sat with people that have been in the industry for 25 plus years and they sit in an electronic table game and they still don't know what to do. So it's about that user experience. It's about that tutorial. Hey, Jess, sit down, play. Your money goes in here. These are the chips. This is how to play. And one of the other things, and I've sort of digressed a bit, but one of the other things we're introducing is tournaments. So, you know, the part of tournaments is from an operator perspective, there are a couple of benefits. It's like, well, let's use the tournaments to drive business in an off-peak time. So increase occupancy. But the best part of it is here we are introducing table games to a whole new customer base. Like people that would visit Vegas or other tourist destinations will never have walked into a casino before. So how do we introduce that customer to a table game? Well, we give them a free-to-play tournament, and we introduce them, and we have an MC talking them through, a bit of a learn-to-play, and they have this great experience where they might win a prize, but they're introduced to the tournaments and our graphic user interface, our customer experience, and then they feel more comfortable, and then they sit down and play a live game on an electronic table game. So that's one thing that we're really looking at, is the evolution of the customer. So coming in, dipping their toe in the water, playing electronic table game, getting more comfortable, getting more used to the experience, and then potentially even going up to the next level and playing a live table game. And I've seen that happen. I mean, it doesn't happen to everybody, but you know, when you've got the tourist dollar, someone coming in and they might just put $10 in a slot machine, well, they can do that in an electronic table game and obviously feel a lot more comfortable with playing in that environment.
I want to bring up the point that you made about COVID, because I had not considered that at all, and that makes perfect sense to me
Absolutely.
In terms of the product, especially when I consider that I talk to a lot of cashless payment companies, and that's something that they have mentioned a lot. Like almost all of them have mentioned the fact that COVID helped. I mean, obviously there was tons of drawbacks, but one of the positives was it facilitated the adoption of a lot of these new technologies that maybe hadn't been as promoted before. And I think that it definitely makes sense in terms of ETGs. I want to get back just momentarily to R&D, because I feel like it's an important part of this equation, because when somebody hears, you know, the term innovation, and you mentioned this obviously before, but you know, the term innovation as applied to the table game sector, what does that necessarily mean to you, and kind of what new avenues are there for table-based play? Is it exploring new options within the existing games? Is it, developing new games? Is it kind of a combination of the two? You know, where does that stand?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's basically taking existing games, because there's roulette is the number one game of choice on electronic table game globally.
Okay.
And then you've got blackjack, and then depending on the market, obviously in Asia it's baccarat, US is craps, but they're your top four. So what do you do to create those games and have a more innovative product? I mean, we've introduced a product called the Universal Cabinet that allows players to play by themselves. So traditionally there were stadiums linked to one game, multiple PlayStations. And then we found that there was a niche market for people that wanted to play by themselves, have a bet, and then deal the game. So that's why Universal Cabinets were created. So we have a Universal Craps game, which you can see all across the US, where players have their own dice tumbler, and they bet, and they press spin, the dice shake, instant result. We have it also on roulette. In Asia, we have it on Sicbo, and it's going absolutely fantastically in the major resorts in Macau. Because again, players can sit at their own device, play at their own leisure, and just press spin once their bet's done, and instant result. So that's one of the things that we're seeing a huge growth market in. And then as far as innovation, we've got new side bets on things like blackjack. So traditional side bets are pairs, things like that, and baccarat. But then seeing what works well in the market and then adopting those to our interface is crucial. So we've got a lot of exciting things, like we've got extreme blackjack, which we've got up to 9 side bets that players can play. And just the intuitiveness of the interface that allows players to bet on these side bets. And that's important as well, understanding the ease of making a decision and really getting down to the crux of the user experience is important, because as I said, like before, it's difficult to potentially understand. And the best thing I find about electronic table games and table games in general, you have the early adopters, the players that will play a game for the first time, and they'll press the help pages and they'll scan through all the rules. And then they'll have someone sit next to them and they say, do you know you can do this by pressing this? They're the best ambassadors for the game that you can have. And that's the beauty about table games. It's very communal. And in particular, games like baccarat are very communal, because everyone's betting against the house. And they will educate each other. And that's the best thing about it. So whilst we can do all this crazy innovative stuff, the best thing is our customers as the ambassadors, and that's what we're finding. But as far as Interblock goes and innovation, yeah, we're just scratching the surface on what we can do, and I'm very excited about what's coming down the pipe.
Definitely, definitely. And, you know, kind of the other side of that coin, or the other half of that equation, obviously, is the compliance part of it. And I think one thing that ETGs I have found among other sectors of the industry are kind of, I don't want to say controversial, I would say more so just like polarizing, I guess, might be more adept. I think people really have a tendency to either really like them or really, you know, for whatever reason, not like them. But I think one of the themes that is brought up among detractors is the idea of security and how that the games are somehow not as secure, or there's, you know, increased liability or things like that. So what is the testing process like for you guys and for ETGs generally?
So the process for us is once R&D complete the software, there is rigorous testing involved internally. So obviously we've got a math model that's built into the software. It's hard-coded. Everything else is hard-coded. Like, there might be restrictions in terms of regulatory restrictions, like how much cash can be inserted into the terminal at any particular time, any payouts that might result in a terminal being locked up. So all these things, if it's going to a particular market, are tested before we then go to a third party, an independent third party. And that's where this is, they're rigorously tested as well. So these independent third parties are approved by the local regulatory body. And so basically that is our stamp of approval that this game offers what it says it does. And then once we get that, then it is approved by the local regulatory body as again. So there's multiple steps to ensure that not only is the software working, but also the rules adhere to which jurisdiction they're going to be submitted for. So trust me, we get past all that step. The game is 100% legitimate. And I get people, I talk to people today, and, you know, when they're playing a virtual product or they're playing some sort of electronic device, they don't trust it. And it's like, well, here you've got a roulette wheel with, when it's 00, there's 38 slots. So the math is the math. We can't tweak it any other way. So if we're paying 35-1, the math is what the math is. It's 5.4%. If it's single zero, it's 2.7%. So we can't do anything. There's an actual device. And the same can be said for the virtual device. Again, it's not the physical wheel, but it's tested for the virtual device. It still has the same amount of slots. Same with blackjack, you're dealing with a six deck or an eight deck continuous shuffler, but it's still the same card. So it's adhering to the math that is approved, but it's about, yeah, convincing that customer that by playing an electronic device, it's legitimate. And, you know, it's probably one of the most rigorous testing industries in the world, because it's got to be. And yeah, obviously, you know, we wouldn't be where we were if we weren't producing products that adhere to all these rules and restrictions.
Well, that's definitely for sure. And the one thing that I would say personally is, like, I would totally I could see why people would have such you know, fears and whatnot. But in my opinion, I feel like the liability of cheating, or the risk of cheating, or the risk of whatever, is the same for any sort of casino offering that's ever been offered, right? I mean, if anyone follows sports betting in the U.S. right now, they would know that you know, basically every quarter of the industry is fraught with risk. So I think those are mainly overblown, especially with regard to ETGs. But I had one last one for you, and I'll get you out of here on this. And I really appreciate you taking the time today. One thing about ETGs that is fascinating to me, and I say that as somebody who is 26 years old and would be considered among the young, you know, demographic or whatever. To me, as somebody who has seen the evolution of digital everything basically in my lifetime, I see ETGs as kind of the gaming version of that. And when I look to, you know, one of the things that we've talked about in our interviews is the intimidation of table games and the lack of the growing lack of players my age who know how to play the games generally. But as somebody who is, you know, has lived on both sides of the aisle and as an operator and a supplier, what do you think that the relationship between standard tables and ETGs is in the future? And what I mean by that is, I have asked a couple people in the past whether or not they believe that a casino, a fully automated casino with all slots and ETGs and no dealers would ever succeed. And obviously that, you know, that elicits various answers from various people of various generations. But I'm curious to hear your take on that in terms of what do you think is the ecosystem for ETGs moving forward? Do they complement traditional tables? Do they kind of cannibalize them? How do you think that that works?
I think they complement. I think I mentioned it before about having a price point strategy. But to your point and your demographic, you know, people that have just turning of legal age to gamble, if they walk into a casino today, it's nothing like it was 20, 30 years ago. So they don't know what they're missing out on. So, I mean, for someone to sit down and play an electronic table game, they'll think nothing of it because, you know, they've played something online, they've played on their phone, they're used to it. But fast forward, yeah, what does it look like? Absolutely, the two will complement each other. I don't think you will see the major casinos existing without having one or the other. Saying that, we've got a product called Smart Pit that looks at digitizing live tables, but we still have a live dealer. So the live dealer will be dealing the cards. The digitalization of it is the chips and the side bets. So it's 100% accurate, it's efficient. We can do dynamic pay tables, we can do all sorts of things, but the player is sitting in front of a tablet. So you would be used to a tablet, your demographic's used to a tablet. You wouldn't know anything about playing with chips, and that's totally foreign to you. So you walk into that casino and go, "Oh, here's a blackjack table. It's $5. I'll sit down and play." You wouldn't know what you're missing out on. So that's the thing. Like, they will complement each other, and our Smart Pit product, we're going to have all sorts of different games. We're showing it at G2E in Las Vegas this year. So it's about taking that product and then what else can we do to make it a lot better? And as I said, it's efficient, it's accurate, it's a great user experience for both operators and customers. But then certainly you look at properties, you know, the high roller will still want to physically squeeze the baccarat cards because he's paying a significant amount of money to squeeze those baccarat cards. But saying that, the high roller could be a young guy that's never squeezed cards and knows nothing about squeezing cards and is quite happy to play on an ETG. So they certainly will coexist. There will be, I think, certain casinos that may do away with live pits as we know it, and then they'll introduce our smart pits. Yeah, certainly watch this space in terms of what will happen. But I mean, your demographic, Jess, is going to be the next gaming customer, and you will certainly probably a lot of you people will not experience playing with chips ever again, and you won't miss it. So that's the thing.
Well, I was going to say some people may hear that and start clutching at their heart, you know, that their very heart. But yeah, I think it's obviously an interesting time for the industry at large, and ETGs are definitely at the very center of that. And you and Interblock are obviously at the forefront of that as well. So Jim, thank you so much for taking the time again, and I really appreciate it. I'm sure we will be in contact soon.
My pleasure, Jess. Great to talk to you. And yeah, thanks for your time and take care.
We thank you for joining us on this episode of the GGB Podcast, sponsored by IGT. With IGT's Resort Wallet, your players will experience the convenience of digital transactions throughout your resort property. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. To learn more about Jim, Interblock Gaming, and all the important issues in gaming, subscribe at ggbmagazine.com. To stay current with the weekly news of the gaming industry, subscribe to ggbnews.com and use the coupon code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss an episode of the GGB Podcast by subscribing on Amazon, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts today. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.